Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
Money fixes everything. As the great Arnold Rothstein said, nothing says I'm sorry better than money. Jim Irsay's that uncle you have over at Thanksgiving who farts during the before the turkey gets served, right out that loud. You know, I mean, like, he just doesn't care.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, we have a football game coming up later this week, but the news and notes keep rolling along out of training camp. How we doing, man?
We're doing good. We got a lot of teams going to put pads on today, so we're going to get a little bit of that. We'll get the reports on who's having a good day. You know, the one thing that drives me crazy is when you read who's up, who's down. You know, I know guys have to do their gig, but, like, one thing about training camp, it's hard and it's tough, and sometimes situations matter where a guy might not look good in a drill or a guy might not be getting the football. Not everything's graded on production to have a good practice. And unfortunately, when you go to those ups and downs, you know, who's up, who's down, it's all about who made a catch, who didn't make a catch. And to me, that's a little bit bizarre. But I'm excited, Femi. I'm ready to go. Football's here. We got it back. I'm so excited. There's so much to talk about. That makes it even better.
There is a lot to talk about. And we were talking about on Lombardi Line, our VSiN show on Saturday, we talked about the whole running back discourse and, like, is this coming to an end? And then Saturday afternoon and evening, I'm getting ready to watch the Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford fight. And all of a sudden my phone is going crazy about a trade request from Colts star running back Jonathan Taylor. But we want to play this cut, though, back from the springtime on April 19th. From Jonathan Taylor when he was asked about his contract since he's entering the final year of his rookie deal. Here's what Taylor had to say back in spring.
It wouldn't be a distraction to me. Like, I'm under contract here for 4 years. I put the pen to the paper, so that's where I'm at right now. I made an obligation to them. They made an obligation to me. But things will happen naturally. Like I said, it's not until you actually get into that situation to where you're like, let's see how do you handle this situation, because you always just see it. But you never know, what do those guys actually go through?
So how did we?
Well, how did name we that get tune? To... That tune changed, didn't it? Wow!
Yeah. Now we're now hearing the remix of that coming up this past weekend, as Taylor has now requested a trade. He requested the trade several days ago, obviously wanting a long-term extension. How did we go from back in April saying, I made an obligation to them, they made an obligation to me, to where we're now meeting in Jim Irsay's RV and we're now talking about a trade request?
I mean, there's only one real analysis that you can make, and one assumption that you can make is obviously the agent has gotten into his head. You know, I think he's got first round management, whomever they are, you know, and he's gotten in his head and say, hey, we got to take this on. You know, we're going to fight for our position. Because when you look at it, I mean, he was sensational 2 years ago, gained 1,800 yards, averaged 9 yards a catch, but last year was not a good year for him. And so what I thought he said back in April the 19th was exactly what you should say. I put the pen to paper. I got to do a contract. I'm 23 years old. You know, I'm gonna go out there and make them make a decision based on what I do. But this shift in his behavior, it's to me, tells me a lot of it must be coming from the agent. I mean, it must be, hey, this is the stance we have to take. And then he goes on Twitter and says, it's not fixable. I mean, look, how many times have I read a relationship's not fixable from an agent to a club? I mean, it's just a comedy. I mean, seriously, it's a freaking comedy. Money fixes everything. There's, as the great Arnold Rothstein said, nothing says I'm sorry better than money. Nothing. And so this will be fixed with money if the – but Jim Irsay is off on the deep end. I mean, truly, I said this before the show started. Jim Irsay's that uncle you have over at Thanksgiving who farts during the before the turkey gets served, right out that loud. You know, I mean, like, he just doesn't care. He doesn't care. You know, they say monks, that one of the spirituality about monks is they're willing to pass gas or do anything because they're completely carefree. They don't care. Well, I'm not saying Irsay's a monk, but he's got monk-like behavior. I mean, it's like when Pauly was at Jackie Jr.'s funeral and he unbuttoned his belt buckle. I mean, that's Jim Irsay. He don't care. He got to say what he thinks. And when you're dealing with that, right? When you're dealing with that, if you're Kawhi, I think that's the agent's name from First Round Management. I don't know the guy. But if you're dealing with that, right, every negotiation is you dealing with somebody. If you know this is who you're dealing with, if you're dealing with the unconventional swordsman, you better play it a little different, because this guy's not normal. This guy's not going to play it normally.
Yeah, no filter, I think, is a good way to describe Jim Irsay, the way that he went ahead and talked to the media shortly after the report came out about the trade request. This was after the RV meeting on Saturday. And I guess for Taylor, probably because I asked the question, how did we get here? And my guess is that obviously a lot has changed between that time in April and all the way now here where we're sitting, where we're on one day away from August. The running backs, I'm sure he saw, hey, these guys did not get their contracts. Maybe he's trying to, he is trying to force the issue and say, all right, well, I want to trade or I want you to pay me. But like you mentioned, this is not a conventional man that they're dealing with in Jim Irsay. Maybe it's logical to pay Jonathan Taylor. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. But even if it were, he might just say, you know what, just out of pride and out of just being petty, I'm not going to do it. And also, we're not going to trade you, because he did say that as well, that we're not trading Jonathan Taylor.
All right, what would you pay him? Is he better than, he's had one really good year. He's a good player. You got to pay him more than Nick Chubb? You got to pay him more than Aaron Jones is at 11.5? I mean, you could bitch about the running back market all you like, right? But it's supply and demand. There's too many running backs. I mean, Miles Sanders had a really good year last year. He went out in the open market. He got $6.35 million. Right? David Montgomery's a good player. Not as good as Taylor, but he's a good player. He got $6 million. Joe Mixon just took a pay cut to 5.7. I mean, Aaron Jones went down to 11.5. I mean, Derrick Henry's at 12.5. I mean, like, if the market is the market and this is what you have to pay for quarterbacks – then why is it you don't have to pay this for running backs? Why are there two different things? See, it's all about what favors the voices. And look, these running backs have people, they have a promotional tour behind them. I mean, people are sympathetic to it. Like it's the market. It is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, it's collectively bargained, as Jim Irsay said.
So, Taylor, I wouldn't have any really apprehension of paying him like a deal that would pay him for the next 2 to 3 years. I'm sure maybe he wants 4 or 5 years or something like that and wants a little bit more security. But I mean, when you look at his numbers, last year was a down year. It was a down year for the entire team. Offensive line fell apart. They didn't get the great quarterback play that they thought from Matt Ryan, and Taylor's numbers suffered from it. Oh, and by the way, he got injured as well, which is why I'm sure the Colts are a little bit scared of paying him. But the previous 2 years, his first 2 years in the season, I mean, he was above 5 yards per carry. He was really productive in the passing game. I mean, like, this is a guy that scores a lot of touchdowns, 18 touchdowns in 2021, 11 his rookie season. We were talking about him heading into last year as one of the premier running backs in the league. I mean, he finished second in the Offensive Player of the Year voting behind Cooper Kupp 2 years ago. So, like, this is one of those weapons that we talk about, and the Colts having a rookie quarterback don't really have to pay the quarterback right now. So maybe you could get away with paying Taylor for 2 to 3 years. And then at that point, if Richardson works out, then it's time to pay him. You can figure out what you'll do with Jonathan Taylor, kind of like how Dallas did with Zeke Elliott, of saying, all right, well, now that we're 2 to 3 years into this thing, we don't really want you anymore, and we'll kind of go ahead and let you go your separate ways.
But the Zeke Elliott proves the point. I mean, how many of those guys didn't get to the end of their contract? All those guys that signed contracts as running backs, they don't make it to the end. Zeke made it last year because he had a guarantee. I mean, this year, James Conner's making it to the end of his deal, which isn't, I think it's, what, 70 a year? I mean, he's making it to the end because he has a guarantee. I mean, other than Nick Chubb and Henry, you know, and Eckler took a pay cut, Aaron Jones took a pay cut. Like, I think Jonathan Taylor's a great player, and I think when you average 9 yards a catch like he did last year, 2 years ago, You know, he got 12 first downs. I think he's worth it, but the market doesn't say it. If you're paying above market value, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Yeah. And what Ursae say is true. The league goes on. I mean, this is the way the league set it up. And so, you know, look, I mean, Barkley screamed and kicked and hauled and all that. I'm going to hold out. I'm not doing this. And he comes in for $909,000 in incentives that they have that he's never really accomplished, and they got to make the playoffs. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. But he did that. I mean, you have to recognize it is what it is.
Well, let's talk about Ursae's comments, because when I saw those Saturday night, and this is the comments for those of you who missed it, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you didn't miss those comments, but I'll read them anyways. He said, quote, "If I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor is out of the league, no one's going to miss us. The league goes on. We know that. The National Football League rolls on. It doesn't matter who comes and who goes, and it's a privilege to be a part of it." Now, I saw those comments Saturday night, and I was like, that's 100% true, but I don't know if we need to say every truth out loud. Like, I don't think you're going to really ingratiate yourself to your employees by saying, well, hey, you're all replaceable. I'm replaceable. Nobody cares. We're going to move on. Like, do you think that's the best practice? Like, we talk about that no filter thing. Like, yeah, it's true, but not every truth needs to be said out loud.
Well, I mean, look, it is true, and it does go on, and all these holdout and all this complaining by the running backs is going to get them nowhere. It's not going to get them anywhere, because there'll be some young running back drafted in the second or third round who may not be as good as Jonathan Taylor, who may not, but he'll be as adequate or close to. And so, you know, they'll move on. I just think, to me, it plays into the sympathy of the media market that people want to keep talking about it. It's simple economics. There's too many good running backs. And Ursae's right. I mean, the league has always just continued to move on. It doesn't stay static. And people go on without you. Why not? I mean, that's why you got to grab as much as you can while you got a chance to grab it. There's no sense in holding back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's essentially what Taylor's trying to do right now with forcing the hand.
No, he's not. No, he's not. He's got a contract. He just said April 19th, I put the pen to paper. He's got a contract.
Well, I mean, we know the contracts. I mean, how many contracts actually expire in the NFL? Like, teams cut guys every day, you know?
Well, but when you have a contract, for the club to do a deal and redo, it's got to benefit the club too. I mean, I don't understand it. Like, we're not in the business to give away money. Like, we're just not. I mean, teams just don't say, okay, take all our money. Like, it's a capitalistic system.
Yeah.
That was collectively bargained.
But also,
I would love you to own a team. You would just give it away. Oh, take it. Go ahead. Oh, please. Feel free. Give it to him. I'll have it. Please. Take the money. I don't need it. I mean, come on, Femi.
Let's talk about that on the other side, because I would not give that away. I'm only giving it away to the great players. And I think Jonathan Taylor is a great player. He's a great player. We'll talk about that on the other side. We're going to take our first break, though. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
All right, well, obviously Jonathan Taylor right now is in this situation with the Indianapolis Colts. And the point that I was making as we were heading to break here, Michael, is that, like, we're talking about how, like, hey, like, you got to try to get it while you can get it, because this thing is not going to last for long. And I think that's what Taylor is acknowledging. And right now he is eligible for a contract extension. He's not doing this after year two where it's like, okay, well, it's collectively bargained to where we cannot pay you because you've only served 2 years in the NFL. The Colts could pay him if they wanted to, but like you mentioned, they're not just going to hand it out for free. So Taylor is saying, all right, well, I have to try to force their hand in some sort of fashion to get my money, because just being showing up to camp and doing your thing, they're just going to let you play that out and it's franchise tag you. And then you'll be right in the same situation that Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley were in. He's trying to prevent that. Like, can't you also see where Taylor's coming from?
He's going to prevent that by doing what he's doing. Oh, he's going to prevent it. Defend that statement you just made. How is he going to prevent that from doing what you're doing?
I don't know if
he's going to scare them to death. He just had an owner that said, if I die tomorrow, life goes on. If he dies tomorrow, life goes on. He's really scared. You just scared him by holding out. Like, you think he gives – see, like, what I think the only way you – we wrote about this for the Daily Coach. There's a great interview on Orson Welles. And Orson Welles was trying to get authority to do the movie Citizen Kane. And he had never made a movie in his life. Never made a movie. He'd just done Broadway plays. But he had this unbelievable ability to tell stories. So RKO, some movie production company, kept coming back to him. And all he wanted was complete authority to run the movie. And he kept saying no, because he didn't care. He didn't care. He didn't really want to do it. He didn't care. When you try to force somebody who doesn't care, you get nowhere. You're never going to get that. Like, this holdout is going to be bizarre. So then he comes to camp and we get this report that he complained about a back. The agent denies there's no back injury. The kid denies it. Okay. Well, I mean, where'd that come from? All right. Well, the reason that he complained about a back, because if he's in there, right, he's on PUP, failed his physical before the season started. But if he complains about a back that didn't occur on campus, they could put him on NFI. And which means they don't have to pay him. And his contract gets told, which means it goes over to the next year, which is not a smart play by the agent at all. You can't go NFI here because you give the club everything. So, you know, now they retracted it. Like, what's his play? I'm not healthy. I'm not healthy. I'm not going to play. Okay, great. You're not going to play? We'll put you on PUP. We'll pay you $4 million. And then next year, we'll franchise you at 10.1 or whatever the number is, and we'll try to trade you. We'll try to trade you. See who else wants to pay you all this money.
Well, Ursay said he doesn't want to trade him. That's what he said, he doesn't want to. I mean, I guess what I'm saying from Taylor is that, like, yeah, like, the chances of him being successful are very slim to none, pretty much probably zero. But from his perspective, he has to try something, or he's going to be right back. Like, so he just sit there and be like, all right, I guess I'll play out my deal.
Why would he say, give Barkley credit. Barkley, for all the false bravado, finally said I wanted to be with my teammates. I mean, if I'm Jonathan Taylor, I'd basically say, look, you know, I said what I said in April. I stand by it. I'm going to come into camp. I'm going to show them that I'm the best running back in the National Football League, and I'm going to earn my contract. I signed it. I did it. If you take the stance that he takes, now they're hostile. You're hostile. The agent will never agree again. Oh yeah, right. Call your bluff. Right. Mm. Yeah. You're really a tough guy. Twitter tough guy. Yeah. Yeah. Like, seriously.
No. Money, yeah, I mean,
we'll answer it.
The agent to me is almost irrelevant in this whole discussion.
He's completely irrelevant because he's convincing the kid we got to act like an asshole. The kid didn't want to act like an asshole at the end of the year.
I mean, that's definitely fair. But I just think that for Taylor, if he goes about it and says, all right, I honored my contract, play out this season, leads the league in rushing, like similar to Josh Jacobs. Come March, what happens? He's on the franchise tag. Same situation as Josh Jacobs. And then what does he have to do? Be Saquon Barkley this time next year and say, all right, can you give me some incentives? And if we make the playoffs, and then after that year, what happens? Like, that's what he's trying to prevent.
Let's play that out. If he comes in there next year and says, and he does all those things you said, and he wants a contract that's, you know, above what Henry got at 12.5, and, you know, that's a market deal, they'll pay the market deal. I don't think they have a problem paying the market deal. I think what you're trying to get is a way above market deal. Like the McCaffrey deal is kind of messing everything up. Right? It's kind of messing everything up. Same thing with Kamara. Like Kamara's $2.5 million more than Henry, almost $2.5 million more than Chubb. Like those deals are almost outlier. Nobody wants to go to those deals.
Well, we talk about the market deal. Like, I don't know if those deals are outliers because we've seen these running back salaries. It's not keeping up with the actual salary cap. So like how is that
demand.
Way above?
Supply and demand. Why is
but
that?
But those guys got it.
But the supply, it's simple economics. Why does nobody understand this, right? Quarterbacks make way too much. Ryan Tannehill, all these guys are not worth the money. But there's no supply, so they make the money. There's too many running backs. You got Kenneth Walker in the second round, Charbonnet. You got all these backs, right? Mm. And you're like, why would I pay? Ramondo Stevenson is as good a back as there is in the league. He's a fourth-round pick. Eckler's a college free agent. Nobody even knew who the hell he was. Like, it's supply and demand. I don't know why it's so hard for people to understand. Why would I pay way above market when I could get Aaron Jones in the sixth round?
I mean, but like you could
say
that
about
any
position. Why would I pay
above
market when I could get Miles Sanders in the second or David Montgomery in the third?
But see, that's where we do this thing with running back, but we don't do that with any other position. Like you can say, why would I pay Ryan
Tannehill? Because there's not enough supply. There's not enough supply.
So every good player at every other position has been drafted in the first round? No, you can find. Like you can say, why would I pay so and so?
Why does Zach Martin want to hold out? Why does Zach Martin want to hold out? Because there's no supply. He knows that there's not a player behind. There's not a lot of offensive linemen. So he has a little bit of leverage.
At offensive line, yes. But at the skill position, guys, like why would I get this wide receiver if I can draft Terry McLaurin in the third round? Why would I do this
because
if
how
I can
many
draft
receivers
this guy
blow
in the third round?
How many receivers have been blown picks?
I mean, there's a lot of good ones. I mean, we have
there's a lot of bad ones too, Femi. There's a lot of bad ones.
I mean, with the passing league, I mean, I just think that we have
John
a
Ross
lot of
just retired. Players. I mean, there was one for you from Seattle. He just retired. Yeah. Hey, ran that's fastest time of the 40, 10th pick in the draft.
That's my guy, man. He helped the Huskies make the college football playoff. I just think that we do this with running backs solely. And I get it. Like, there's a lot of good ones.
No, we don't. We do it because supply and demand. It's Adam. Yeah. I mean, it just goes back to the sip. It's all what it is. Like, why is that so hard to grasp?
It's not hard.
Travis Etienne's a really good player. Because there's abundance of receivers. There's more receivers out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not – everybody thinks they're draft. The problem is what I wrote about. Everybody thinks they're drafting a number one receiver, and they're not.
My thing with the position is just that – other than in the trenches, like offensive line and defensive line, I'm there with you. We don't have enough supply, so I'm willing to pay those guys. These skill guys, I'm sorry. Like, I can find a wide receiver in the second or third round. I don't need to pay $25 million. Just like how we do it with running backs, I'll do it with those positions. Some of these quarterbacks, Daniel Jones, like all these guys, like I can find that. I can replace them.
Right.
Can I
it's
not?
The same thing in basketball. The quarterback position in the NFL – is like the good player in basketball. You know, Bradley Beal's a good player. Mm-hmm. But if we don't pay him, we're not going to be as good, so we got to overpay him, right? You know, and so that what happens is in basketball, they're starting to overpay good as if they were great, right? And it's the same thing at quarterback. We're starting to pay good players great money. Daniel Jones is not. I mean, I've watched him again. They're behind 28-0 in that Eagle game like it was nothing. I mean, and don't tell me, you know, it wasn't his fault. He throws an interception. He's got he's got a third down and a fourth down he can't convert. He gets sacked on both plays. Like, don't tell me that. Like, I watched that game again. Like, don't tell me that. Like, and now the defense wasn't very good either, but like they had no, like their separation between the Giants and the Eagles based 100%. On last year was significant. Significant, 100%. Right? So I'm with you on Daniel Jones, but that's what happens. They pay good like they're great.
Yeah, and you can look at the Minnesota Vikings as well. The reason why they're hemorrhaging talent and all that stuff. Now, I know they restructured Danielle Hunter, but they were cap-strapped with that Cousins contract, that fully guaranteed deal that they signed him to come onto their team. It's like, you're giving this guy all this money when he's, like, you're paying him like he's great when he's not great. And I get, like,
but supply the alternative, and demand, like, yeah, it's hard, there's no alternative. You just paid Bradley Beal like he's great and he's not. I mean, you can go through the list of these guys making this ridiculous money. They paid Dylan Brooks $80 million for 4 years, you know? Like, it's ridiculous. But people are scared to say, well, if we don't have them, we're going to be bad. Now, you're sitting here without, you know, you're saying you're willing to do that. But if you worked for the Giants, you would probably say, well, we got to sign. I mean, we got to sign. Yeah. What's our alternative? We have no alternative.
I mean, they say that, hey, if we don't do this, we'll be bad. You also are not going to sniff the Super Bowl, which is the ultimate goal. I mean, when did Minnesota sniff the Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins?
You're guarding your desk is what this is, and there's more running backs, right. So you let that one go. And I mean, look at it. How many quarterbacks? There's 3, 6, 9. There's 11 quarterbacks making $40 million or more a year. $40 million or more.
I mean, we're guarding desk, but Rick Spielman's not there anymore for the Minnesota Vikings. Like, you know, like you can guard your desk for X amount of years for so long, but eventually the Grim Reaper is going to come knocking at the door if you guys don't produce. And I think, like, when you pay those quarterbacks, it becomes harder to produce paying average or good guys great money. Like, there's no way to build the roster when you're doing that. And you're like, yeah, you might give yourself a couple more years, but you're not going to get to where you want to go.
You should call John Mara on the phone. You and John should have a conversation. I think that.
I mean, I should. I could have prevented him from paying his quarterback great money when he's actually not even that good.
You could have never prevented that. He was determined to pay that.
That's why they have a win total of 7.5 after paying their quarterback. Let's see how that works out this fall. On the other side, we'll talk about some injuries from around the league. This is the GM Shuffle.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
All right, let's talk about a guy that's probably going to get paid before the regular season starts, and that is Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. I mean, earlier last week, man, the scare on the Twitter timeline when we saw Joe Burrow being carted off the Bengals practice field after suffering a calf strain. Head coach Zach Taylor was pressed on this and saying, hey, what is the injury? How long is this going to take? Taylor has since said this will take several weeks. When pressed on what does several weeks mean, he said several weeks means several weeks. So we believe that the Cincinnati Bengals have dodged the major bullet there of Burrow being out for an entire season. But this is still something that's going to be a little tricky for them to navigate in the early portion of the season, because once again, we're now talking about Joe Burrow missing significant time in training camp.
I mean, he didn't play last year in preseason. Remember, he had the appendix?
Appendectomy.
I mean, he didn't throw one pass last preseason. He's not going to throw one pass this preseason. So that's just modus operandi. They signed Reed Stennett from the University of San Diego as the third. So, you know, Brandon Allen's on San Francisco's team. So they've got, you know, they're going to have to go with Trevor Siemian and whomever else, you know, that they can kind of muster through their lineup. I mean, look. It is what it is. I mean, they're fortunate that it wasn't an Achilles. They're a slow starting team. I mean, think about it. They didn't do anything this offseason. I mean, they took a very slow start. And they'll try to figure out a way. They've got a lot of moving pieces defensively, but, you know, Burrow will get paid. Mike Brown wants to pay Burrow. It's an easy contract to do. The market there has, you know, there's a lot of players that he can look at and compare it as. So they'll move forward. I mean, it's really not that complicated. I think the thing that you have to in a betting world is Cincinnati will start slow again. I don't anticipate them starting fast. I think defensively, particularly because they have two new safeties, that it's going to take some time for them to get the calls, get the communication, get all that stuff done early in the season.
Can they afford to start slow? Because we've talked about how the AFC North is much better than it was last year, and it was still pretty good last year, but in my opinion, this is the best division in all of football. Can they afford a slow start?
I don't know. You know, Femi, I think that's a great question. I mean, you know, that's the problem, is there's going to be a team the eighth team in the AFC is probably going to be better than the fifth team in the NFC that makes the playoff.
It might be the fourth team.
But that's just the way it is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. They started 2 years in a row at 5-4, and they ended up, you know, they had to play a wild card game against the Raiders. They won that in the last second. They beat Tennessee in Tennessee, and then they beat Kansas City in Kansas City that year. Last year, you know, they got to host a game, and then they had to go to Kansas City. I think it's challenging because, as you said, the competition, Pittsburgh's going to be way better. Pittsburgh will be better.
Yeah.
I think Cleveland's going to be better. So you're right, but, I mean, this is the way they've taken it, and they've peaked at the right time. I mean, give – as much as I don't agree with what they do in terms of preparing, they have peaked. The second half of their last 2 years have been sensational, and Taylor deserves credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they're definitely always an ascending team in the second half of the season, kind of peaking in that playoff time. Baltimore has also gotten better. Lamar Jackson's back in the fold. Did you see the Lamar Jackson to Odell Beckham touchdown from training camp? Did that come across your timeline?
Was he under center? Didn't he run a bootleg under center?
Yeah, under center, a little play action.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a new offense, huh?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, Lamar probably won't play any in the summer, but at least we'll get to see the offense, right?
Yeah. No, it's I'm optimistic about Baltimore's offense. Defensively,
are you betting them on the over?
I can't get there. I mean, I haven't bet any AFC.
You just said you were optimistic on it.
Optimistic about the offense. I was about to say defensively, I have question marks with the pass rush, the secondary. I think there's some issues there. Like it's, I don't know about Baltimore.
They got an A in the draft. I don't know how you could be not love what they did. I mean, they got an A in the draft, so.
I mean, we're getting rave reviews from our guy Zay Flowers, man. Like he looks electric, according to the timeline. We haven't seen him actually play a game.
Everybody's electric. I mean, tell me a guy that doesn't look. Have you heard anybody that doesn't look good?
We'll get into that later because I have heard.
I mean, Anthony Richardson took 7 hours to throw a deep ball, and all everybody wanted to do was talk about how great he threw the deep ball. Now look. I'm not down on Anthony Richardson. It's going to take him some time, but we're going to have to watch him play in a game. You know, we're going to have to watch him, see how he handles a game, plays with rhythm. Because remember, the preseason is different than the Saturday game, and the preseason is way different than the Sunday game.
Mm-hmm. Kudos to that beat writer, by the way, that was tweeting about Anthony Richardson, because they actually put the disclaimer that he would have been sacked if this was a real game. Because usually you don't get the disclaimer. Usually it's just like he uncorked a ball 65 yards in the air and
done
that.
Like, so
I was like,
we
that
had
was
him
good.
On, and he said
you
that,
guys had him on
that Richardson. Yeah, Richardson has looked good in some team situations. He struggles more in 7-on-7. He's looked good in 7-on-7. He struggles in team situations, which is look when you're in 7-on-7, you can hold the ball. There's no rush. Yeah. The pocket's clean. You should look good in 7-on-7. The team settings is a little different, you know. Now remember this: when he's practicing against Indy, he's playing against Seattle cover three. It isn't like he's getting a lot of different looks. Indy's defensive scheme is relatively simplistic, so unless they're doing scout team stuff, which nobody's doing yet, it should be rather easy for him to get his feet wet and move along.
Yeah, we especially like a week or so from now, maybe 2 weeks from now, like he should have the hang of that defense, at least what they're doing, and feel a little bit more comfortable. But we know rookies, they tend to struggle there. So we got the disclaimer though on Anthony Richardson. But we talked about the Burrow injury to start this segment. Let's talk about the Jalen Ramsey injury, because this one's a little bit more serious for the Miami Dolphins. Because Ramsey, it sounds like with this meniscus tear is what they're calling it. He had the surgery Friday afternoon. Sounds like he won't be back until December if all goes well. He was one of their big offseason acquisitions alongside Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator. Like, it's not a situation where it's like, how do they recover from this? Because I think that's a little bit too drastic. But this is a pretty big blow to that defense, though, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think so, especially considering that most teams, you know, Miami's a really good run. Their front seven's hard to run the ball. I mean, they were sixth in the National Football League last year in yards per attempt allowed. And so people took they threw the ball quite a bit on them, and they were 31st in passing attempts against them. I mean, people tried to throw the ball on them, and you know they couldn't intercept passes. They gave up a ton of yards, you know, in terms of their offense, and they handled it, you know. So it's going to be important. Look, Xavier Howard wasn't very good last year. They drafted Cam Sutton from South Carolina to help him in the back end. You know, Needham is typically their star corner. They put him on. They put him on PUP. He's not ready to go. So the secondary, the outside corner, is going to be a little interesting to see how it all develops and comes through. But they're you know, when they brought in Eli Apple, they're telling you we need another corner. Yeah. I mean, they signed Kenyon Crosson from the Giants, who's a special teams player typically. Justin Bethel's a special teams player. So they're a corner short. They're going to need to fix that.
Where are you at with the Dolphins, just in general, in this AFC East? Because I know we've talked ad nauseum about the New York Jets, and rightfully so. They have a new quarterback, one of them being Aaron Rodgers. But where are you at with them in comparison to New England, to the Buffalo Bills, who right now are the betting favorites still to win that division around like plus 120 or so? Are you buying into the Dolphins here from a season perspective? Well,
I mean, look, their offensive line got two quarterbacks hurt last year. I mean, Tua and Teddy. I mean, Teddy got concussed too, right? You know, yeah. And so I mean, as good a season that Tua had in terms of throwing the ball, he had 400 attempts in 13 games. I mean, they made no effort to try to run the ball, and their offensive line isn't any better. Armstead's on PUP, Austin Johnson at right tackle. Are we sure he's good enough? You know, I think that's going to be the fascinating thing. Are they? You know, the two areas of weakness for this Miami team was their offensive line and their corner. They didn't do anything to the offensive line. And they traded for Ramsey at corner. Now, are they, you know, but now Ramsey's hurt. Can Tua stay healthy? He's going to get hit. I mean, if you call it, if you're 31st in rushing attempts, which is what Miami was, and they weren't behind in games, right? They weren't behind in games. Think about this. Take a guess. Where do you think Miami fit on third down offense in the National Football League last year?
Ooh, third down offense. I would say it was a pretty explosive offense. So 12th, 13th.
How about 24th? How about 24th converting third downs? Right? 24th. They were 24th on third down offense. They were 24th on third down defense. Now they played way too much man. They fired Boyer. They got him out of there. So, you know, they played man and had no corners because Howard couldn't really play last year, whether he was hurt or not. We'll see this summer. But to me, that's the concern. You know, I mean, you got to hold up on third down with your protection. As good as they are at the skill position, they still got to hold up. Are they going to be able to hold up? Can Armstead stay healthy? We know the answer. He won't play 17 games. That's just not going to happen. He's a good player, but he won't play. Can Austin Johnson stay healthy? Can they play good up front? I mean, that's where I am with Miami. I'm going to buy their offensive line.
Yeah, I think they just need Teron Armstead to play the right games because, like, you know, he's going to miss some games, but it's like as long as he's healthy, if they get to the playoffs, is what.
But
you
what
need
are the right
for.
Games? I mean, New England's defense is good, the Jets' front's good, Buffalo gives them trouble. There's that's six games you got to play good in, right? That's a hard thing to do, and you got to keep your quarterback healthy. You know, you could say, you know, it's. I mean, think about it, McDaniel and Kyle. Say whatever you want. I think Kyle's offense is spectacular, right? But their protections are not always allowing the quarterback to stay healthy. San Francisco went through how many quarterbacks? They went through
three last year.
They went through the great Trey Lance. They went through Jimmy Garoppolo. They went through Brock Purdy. They went through Josh Johnson. And then there they are.
Yeah.
Four. Same thing in Miami. What's the commonality? When it becomes a drop-back game, they're not really equipped for it. They get pushed. They get hit. It's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, they almost put Christian McCaffrey at quarterback in that NFC Championship game. That was
what's the similarity? They don't have, like, San Francisco's going to try to play a right tackle this year. I mean, they're going to hope that they can stay healthy at quarterback again this year. We'll see. When they can run the ball and do all that. See, where McDaniel didn't even try to run the ball. He just wanted to he was like, Tyreek wants the ball. Waddle wants the ball. We got to give him the ball. We'll see. At some point, you know, this is a big thing. At some point, there's winning, and then there's who's winners. And winning the game is more important than winning the stats.
I would agree with that. I like that they throw early on, but the fact that they don't run the ball to close games out, that is very
strange. I got a question to ask you when we come back from the break.
Okay. All right, well, I'll answer that question. We'll also answer the question of what's going on between Aaron Rodgers and Sean Payton, and also the Niners QB situation. This is the GM Show.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Michael, you ended the segment saying that you wanted to ask me a question. What did you want to ask me?
Well, I've been going through this getting ready for the season and trying to do prep. And one of the things I think that I'm going to write about this for the Daily Coach, I think it's really important, is to understand that, you know, in most of these organizations, the job descriptions, everybody thinks their job description has winning in it, right? Mike McDaniel's the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, you know, but he's really just, he's the offensive coordinator, where winning is in his content. For him to keep his job, the criteria is winning. For the offensive coordinator, it's to get first downs, to score points, and to gain yards, okay? That's that. It has nothing to do with winning in it, right? Mm-hmm. The same thing with the defensive coordinator. Get first downs, stop them from getting first downs, stop them from scoring, and turn the ball over. Nothing about winning. You could be on a really, really shitty team and be number two in the league in defense, and you'll be up for a head coaching job. Okay? So there's winning, and then there's winners. So when you're winning as a team, you know, you're all those three things work together. They kind of synthesize together. So, for example, I was going through this, and we talk about all these quarterbacks that have to be managed. So if I were to say to you, you know, the great Asante Samuel said that Belichick had nothing to do with the Patriots winning six Super Bowls. Okay, great, Asante. I'm sure you didn't really do any research with that commentary, but let's just put things in perspective. Tell me how many yards did Tom Brady throw for against the St. Louis Rams in their first Super Bowl win?
Whew. Back in 2001, it was not the passing league that we live in now. I would say 190, 200, around that range.
Okay. They ran for 134. They threw for 133.
Wow.
Okay. So my point about that is they did what it took to win the game. They made timely plays. Brady makes a great throw to Patton in the back corner of the end zone. They make timely plays. But what happens to a lot of these programs, and why you have to be really careful, is the head coach is the only guy who has winning in his job description. And so if he's not demanding to play the game the right way, to give a team a chance to win, to protect certain elements of the other phases of the team, you got no chance. It's like a team saying, you know, we want to play fast. We want to play no huddle. We want to play tempo. But your defense stinks. So when you do that, all you're doing is putting your defense on the field more.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's what McCarthy decided when he moved on from Kellen Moore. He was tired of having a winner. Moore got all these head coaching interviews. He was more interested in winning.
Yeah. No, I was honestly just about to ask you about McCarthy, like, taking over from Kellen Moore there, because, I mean, being the head coach, he knows that, hey, we got to win the game and do what it takes to win the game. Kellen Moore, he's not really seeing it from that 10,000-foot view. And it's not in his job description to see it from that view.
It's not in his job description. It's not. Yeah. It's really not. It's like Kyle Shanahan getting blamed for not running the ball in Super Bowl, you know, in the Super Bowl. His job is to get first downs and score points. Unless Dan Quinn walks over to him and tells him, hey, man, we're going to run it here, then, you know, and that's the perfect example. And we don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about that enough. Like, the Patriots won that Super Bowl. Think about the Pittsburgh game. Go back the next week before they played it, right? The Pittsburgh game. If Troy Brown doesn't return the punt, they're not winning that game.
Yeah. Tom Brady got hurt, and Drew Bledsoe was in the game against Pittsburgh. And, yeah, that's – I'm glad you said that, because we don't talk about that enough. And I feel like obviously, like, the offensive schemes and all that stuff, like, it's really interesting and it does matter. But I feel like we spend way too much time on stuff like X's and O's and all that versus, like, all right, how do we actually manage the game? Because the point of the game that day is to try to win the game. It's not to try to put up as many points or try to show off this offense or whatever. It's like, it's to win the game. And you got to do certain things that maybe, it's like, I'm not necessarily calling this play to be the most productive play ever, but I think that this play call is going to help us actually accomplish the goal, which is win. Because that's how we all move
right
on.
And so those two games that they won, the Ram game and the Steeler game, the defense, which Tom doesn't play, just to point out, created 7 turnovers.
I thought I saw Brady out there dropping back in coverage.
Asante must have saw him doing that. I mean, that's how stupid these statements are. Like, is Belichick a better coach with Brady? Without a doubt. I mean, they need each other. Everybody needs one another. That's the point. Yeah. And that's the whole point of this conversation is, you know, as it relates to Miami and Tua, is if Mike McDaniel going to protect Tua? Or is he just going to say, I got to get the ball? You know, is he going to be our offensive coordinator calling plays? I think if he starts doing that, Vic Fangio will come down and try to there'll be a fight.
If I'm Mike McDaniel, I don't think I'd be wanting to fight Vic Fangio. That's just me.
Because Vic wants to win. Vic's about winning. He's been a head coach. He's an older coach. He wants to win. It's about winning. You could say, well, McDaniel wants to win too. Yeah, he does. But his formula for winning has affected the team.
Well, I think one coach who has mastered this pretty well is Sean Payton. As an offensive play caller, he has the offensive play calling background, but he's learned how to sort of manage games. He's won a Super Bowl and he's won many of other games as well. But Sean Payton recently getting into it, which I thought it was rather strange seeing this, because usually we hear coaches kind of like, all right, like you don't really like break the code and go after other coaches and stuff like that. And he went after Nathaniel Hackett. No two ways about it. Talking about how it was the worst coaching job last season with the Denver Broncos. Well, Payton, he hasn't retracted those statements, but he kind of was like, all right, like I shouldn't have said that. Here's what he had to say when he addressed it with Broncos media earlier this weekend.
I had one of those moments where I still had my Fox hat on and not my coaching hat on. And, you know, I said this to the team in the meeting yesterday. We've had a great off season relative to that, you know, and I've been preaching that message. And here I am, the veteran, you know, stepping in it. And, you know, it was a learning experience for me. It was a mistake. Obviously, I needed a little bit more filter. You know, there's a pound of flesh for these guys. And as a coach, you stick up for them. And after a while, you know, we're past that season last year. And you know, I said what I said. And obviously, I needed it a little bit more restraint. And I regret that.
So Payton says he regrets the comments. Didn't apologize for them, which I don't think he should have. But
I love Sean. And I was... you know, I'm a fan of Sean, been a friend for a long time. When we brought him into Philadelphia in 1999, he's been tremendous. But when he had his Fox hat on, he wasn't very controversial. He said a lot of good things about football, but he wasn't controversial. So what I think he did is what all leaders did. We wrote about this for the Daily Coach today. He stood in front of his team, and he threw Nathaniel Hackett under the bus. Probably not the right thing to do, but he had to. The guy he really threw under a bus was George Payton, his general manager, because Payton's the guy who hired all these people. Payton's the guy who was in charge of the organization. Mm-hmm. Payton had authority over everything. So that's the guy that everybody's focused on. Nathaniel, nobody focuses on George Payton, and George is responsible for all this. If I were George, I would be worried about my job. I mean, I thought they would make a change. But I think what Payton did was put all the pressure on him, which is what all great leaders do. It comes through me. You know, everybody said, well, he blamed somebody else. He blamed people that aren't in the building. He blamed that they're gone. So now everybody's going to say the players are absolved, and if they don't win, it's on him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if they don't have success, he's going to be the one that gets the criticism, because everyone's going to bring these comments back, which is, like you mentioned, he's putting it all on his back of saying, all right, like, if we don't succeed, hey, you can come at me, because I'm the one that's been willing to throw the gauntlet down and say that we're going to go ahead and correct what was wrong a season ago. But I'm sure you saw Aaron Rodgers' comments at Jets camp Sunday afternoon. Rodgers said to Peter Schrager of NFL Network, saying, keep my coach's name out of your mouth. It's what Aaron Rodgers said, defending
He went full Will Smith, didn't he? He went full Will Smith.
Everything but the F word. That's what he said. I was like, we got to get him in the octagon or something, man. Payton and Rodgers, let's go.
I mean, look, was it not? What he said was true. They were poorly coached. I mean, that's a fact. Now, the one thing is he broke the creed, right? You know, when you go to no doctor badmouths another doctor. They just have this code of conduct, right? Yep. Same thing in the NFL. There's no coach badmouths another coach. You know, even though privately they do, but you know, publicly they don't. So he did, but he did it for a specific reason. You started this asking the question that he asked it now. He did it now because they're getting ready to start camp. He wanted it, he didn't, if he would have done it in the OTAs, it wouldn't have been as meaningful. Now he's got a chance to basically, I've done 6 months of work. I've been here. Here's the problem. And it was, and I'm taking the responsibility.
Yeah. It's just Rodgers is going to stick up for his guy as well, as he should. You know, it's like stick up for your offensive coordinator.
Of course he is.
Nathaniel Hackett and he are very close. He said that
he got
this time with Hackett. Yeah, he
got on the job in Denver. I mean, you don't think that George Payton. I mean, go back and read that Denver Post article about how proud George Payton and his staff were about finding Nathaniel Hackett and how they basically came together as a consensus. Once again, proving that there's never been a monument dedicated to a committee. My guess just proves it. Remember this. Everybody thought Dan Quinn was getting that job. Everybody did, including me.
Same. And
including people close to Dan Quinn. But he didn't. Because Nathaniel came out of nowhere. And it had nothing to do with Rodgers. It had everything to do with they were impressed.
Seems like he's a nice guy, I guess. I mean, maybe that's why Rodgers loves him.
I'm sure he is.
Maybe he's charismatic in the room, but
I don't blame him either, Femi. I mean, the reality of it is this poor guy was put in a really hard job, and nobody helped him. There was nobody there to help him. There was no senior leadership there, and that's on George Payton. He should have said, hey, Nathaniel, we got to stop this, or we shouldn't do that. Like, there was nobody in the room. It just shows you that nobody knew what they were doing. And for Sean to say what he said, you got to, well, who was watching who was overseeing this?
I'd be looking over my shoulder if I'm George Payton. Got to get that thing in line. Otherwise, your days could be numbered out there in the Rocky Mountains. That does it for this edition of the GM Shuffle Podcast. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to Beeson. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll be back on Thursday with another Blue Chips, Red Chips. We're going to the trenches. We're talking about some edge rushers on Thursday. Michael, I will talk to you then. Until then, we'll see you guys. All the best of luck going forward, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.